I joined the Social Democratic movement when I was quite young. We have to enhance social justice. Those who have a lot have to pay more. Housing may not be a European competence, but it is a European problem everywhere. Von der Leyen, she needed our votes to be elected. Now EPP has moved really clearly to the right.
What brings the hope inside Europe?
Sanchez. He brings in some ideas and is not really supported. As we have seen also during this informal summit. And I think the successes of the Spanish economy are there.
Hello, this is FEPS Talks, the podcast series of the Foundation for European Progressive Studies. My name is Laszlo Andor, I'm the Secretary General of FEPS, and I have a guest today, who is Nicolai Schmidt, who in reality is not a guest anymore because he became the President of FEPS. Congratulations, Nicolai.
Thank you, Laszlo.
Welcome to this podcast, and we are really happy that you made yourself available for this conversation, which usually is very informal. And I would like to start with a kind of introduction. Although our political family knows you very well, I believe in Luxembourg they know you as a former minister. In Brussels they know you as a former commissioner. And in our political family, the Social Democrats in Europe, everybody knows you as the former Spitzenkandidat. And 2 years ago, when you became the lead candidate of the European Socialist, I think there was really a celebration already in Rome, and a lot of people came out with an impression that we saw a new Nicola from a new side, because you were so passionate to present yourself. You addressed many, many issues, social policy on which you had been working, but also a lot of about foreign affairs and the questions of sustainability and what kind of economic and social model we would need to pursue. That should be my first question. What do you bring with yourself as someone who represented the whole political family in this period, now to lead the think tank?
Well, I've been in, let's call it, very active politics for quite a time. I started to be a minister in 2004 in Luxembourg, and then after a few years, I became commissioner. And so I had the opportunity to accumulate some experience in mainly social portfolios, but I also had been a deputy foreign minister. I was a diplomat before, so foreign policy obviously never left me entirely. So now with FEPS, when I was approached to come to FEPS and to take the presidency of FEPS, I was really very, very happy because I had also the opportunity to follow the work of FEPS, the team you are now leading as Secretary General. And it's for me a new step in my political activity. Not to be perhaps in the center of political activity, to be a bit aside, to have a view on how things evolve, change, and they change, I would say, rapidly and dramatically. So, and that's why I accepted this presidency at FEPS. It's for me an honor, but it's also some, I would say, logical outcome of what I've done during my life, my professional life. I joined the Social Democratic movement when I was quite young. And that's why it's so important for me now to be here and to help our movement, our progressive movement, to sail through this very turbulent mm-hmm. waters.
Mm-hmm. A question about indeed the period when you were in the European Commission, and I can say it without any kind of envy, that was a golden age of social policy making at the European level in a portfolio which today is facing a lot of headwind. And what do you think made it possible, apart from your own commitment and determination, that you could deliver so much?
Yeah, no, I think the political conditions were just more favorable. First, we were stronger in the European Parliament in the sense that our partners, and especially the EPP, was relying on our votes much more than they do now. It was also, I would say, a bit a different EPP. Now EPP has moved really clearly to the right. And I would say von der Leyen, she needed our votes to be elected because she was a surprise candidate suddenly. We all know the story about how the president of the commission was selected at that moment, and she needed the votes. So she had to take clear commitments, and the clear commitments were also commitments on social progress in Europe. Well prepared, I have to admit, by the adoption of the social pillar, because the social pillar then became not just a nice declaration, it became the basis for operational, for active social policies at European level.
Mm-hmm. Well, one, I would even say, crowning achievement was the minimum wage directive, but that was in a legal limbo for some time, and the court ruling was only delivered at the end of last year, when it was declared that, okay, by and large, this directive can stay. How would you explain the significance of this?
Well, I think the significance of this directive is quite high. It's quite important because we have shown, especially after the court judgment, that Europe is not cannot or should not be inactive, or is not forced to be inactive in social policies, including wage policies. That was the big issue. Now, indeed, after this court judgment, we have to make sure that the directive is applied, because that's, I think, the biggest challenge. It has to be transposed in national legislation, where it has to be, because while some countries still have their system of collective bargaining only, which we accept it, as far as collective bargaining is covering a very high proportion of people covered by collective agreements. But now it's up to the Commission, by the way, to make sure that first the directive is correctly transposed and is correctly applied. Mm-hmm. That's the big challenge. And I think as Social Democrats now, together with the unions in the different member states, we have to keep pressure high to make sure that this directive, which is an important step, telling that there should be no working poor, there should be no salary which do not allow people to have a decent living. That's, I would say, that's the basis of our social democratic commitment.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, once we have this basis, the question is what we build on it. Because once there is an achievement like an EU directive on minimum wage, or the crisis response instruments, the SURE, and similar very important interventions, what can come as a new frontier? Because since then, not only Europe, but also in the United States, we saw affordability becoming a catchword and the center of attention, especially for the progressive political movements. How is this translated into a political agenda in governance? Mm.
Well, I think good wages are a way to make things more affordable. That's the first, I would say, condition. The second one is to make social services or certain services like health, like the services for children or for elderly people affordable. That's an important issue. Very important in the US, where the public services are much less developed than in Europe, but also more and more important in Europe, where we see some privatization of health, of social services, and then the consequences of that services are not anymore affordable. So that's a whole approach to make finally, when you work, you should have a decent life, and things should be affordable. And not you are poor because you cannot afford housing being a very important issue in that context, because for many people now, especially young people, housing is not anymore affordable. That's one of the, I think, key issue. And I think one of our successes, the Social Democrats in the context of this commission program, is first to have imposed that housing may not be a European competence, yeah, but it is a European problem everywhere. Mm-hmm. People are talking about affordable housing. And to have now the commissioner, a difficult job, I have to say. I started with that. We started with homelessness, but then switched also to the housing issue. We had a few European ministerial meetings on this particular issue, and now it's to see how Europe can support dynamic, active housing policies.
I believe these issues are now so much in the center of the attention and the effort of the Social Democrats, because we have experienced an erosion of the support. In many countries, there has been a setback in terms of the public support, the strength of the social democratic parties and politics in general. And indeed, what we assume is that if you're really focused and also can deliver, then people would indeed turn to the socialist, social democratic, progressive parties, and with greater trust in government roles at different level, European and national. But some of this, like housing, for example, if you start acting now, will only deliver a result several years down the line. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, the shift to the right, including the far right, might remain a very alarming trend. Do you think this rivalry between right and left also has issues of the social policy at its heart? Because if you look at it from the right, that's very much about migration and related issues.
Well, first, I think you, with these issues and topics, you can win elections. We have seen it in the US with the election in New York, because affordability was the key word, and housing was an important word, and social services were at the center of this campaign. So I think we have to bring people back on these concrete issues of their daily lives. And perhaps I have to be a bit critical to our family. We have forgotten the daily problems sometimes of citizens. So we have to get back to the to these daily problems, like wages, prices, good jobs, and that this is the core issue of social democracy. So that's important that we focus on this, on these issues. Now the point is that we live in a period of major insecurity, and the right, the conservatives, but especially the extreme right, they are playing on this feeling of insecurity. That's why, and we have seen that through history permanently, they try to build up other subjects, other topics. Migration very much linked to insecurity, and always this opposition between the migrant and us. And I think this is something we have to deal with. And we can only deal with that showing that the extreme right, and even the conservatives finally, they do not really take care of people's daily problems and lives. They just create and build on this feeling and and enhance this feeling of insecurity. And well, we have to bring the counter narrative to that. That's the only way how we can really, I think, fight and combat this very toxic narrative of the extreme right. Look, the extreme right in the European Parliament has not voted in favor of any social measure, saying, no, that's not the job of Europe, that's national. No, that's something they are not interested in. And they are even against it, because they have their narrative, and the narrative is to make people feeling insecure, fear. Fear is an instrument, is their instrument of doing politics. And that's something we have really to counteract.
There is indeed a lot of insecurity in the environment, but also the geopolitical competition in a new scale, in a new form. And I was wondering if we can connect the social agenda with this geopolitical situation, because in reality, what Europe also would need to defend is not only its market, not only its borders, but also its social model.
Absolutely.
And I think in the last few months, when the tension was really deepening in the transatlantic terrain, it's probably not there's not enough discussion about this. That at the end of the day, what the Europeans would need to focus is to protect the social achievements. Yes, there is erosion in many ways. A lot of people struggle with affordability or the lack of it. But we also have a lot to be proud of, the achievements of the European social model. How would you connect, let's say, the social standards and the social rights which are defined in Europe with, let's say, these geopolitical comparisons and rivalries?
Yeah, well, we know that the security of Europe has changed in the terms that we cannot rely anymore on the Americans. We have no guarantee anymore that they will protect Europe. And unfortunately, I have to say, when we are talking about protecting somebody against whom, well, Russia has become, or has always been, but I think has become again, a real threat. What we see in Ukraine, but also the threats against other European states and mainly also EU member states. So this is a fact that Europe has to do more for its own security. We are talking now about strategic autonomy. And the point is, if you have not also the power to say, well, Europe can rely on itself in terms of its security, well, we have not a very strong margin for negotiating, including with the US, as we have seen, on trade and so on. So I think that's one fact. Now, how to make our citizens accept this in some way shift? Well, we cannot build now on the security issue by saying, okay, we reduce social expenditures, and because we have now to invest much more in defense, because that will absolutely reinforce, strengthen the extreme right, and it will divide our societies. It will really tear down the cohesion of our society. And that's not what we need. We need more cohesive, more fair and just societies, precisely in this new geopolitical context. A divided society, divided European societies, which are abused by the extreme right, do not strengthen Europe, but will weaken Europe. And that's why we have to make sure that the social model is safe, that we are protecting, adapting sometimes, I agree, but protecting our social model, which means also debating how fair our societies are. Because when you're talking about protecting our social model and We have talked about affordability. That means also that social justice, inequality are real issues, and I would even say have become very, very urgent topics. It's about taxes, it's about distributing the load of new investments and so on. And it cannot be that the working class, that middle classes are the only ones to pay for. That's not possible. So I think we have to protect our social model. We have to enhance social justice, social inclusion, which means also that those who have a lot have to pay more. Mm-hmm. This is an old social democratic, I would say, approach, which is always criticized by our adversaries. But I think this is now an issue which cannot be eluded. And that's why we have to fight for our social model. In this, to make Europe strong in this new geopolitical context.
Mm-hmm. Well, indeed, there is the external, but also the internal threat. The techno-oligarchs of the United States, indeed, are very explicit, and their political agents, too. But inside Europe, there is also a big pressure for this deregulation of everything. It has been targeting a variety of EU policies like climate. Do you think an omnibus would also come for the social legislation, or there would be more caution on the right side?
Well, first, nobody is against simplification. Nobody. Nobody is in favor of bureaucratization. We all agree that bureaucratization or simplification, they are issues. But to believe that we will now restore Europe's competitiveness just by some omnibus directives is just an illusion, or is just also some I would even say some kind of fake news. The point is, well, when they speak about simplification, they mean deregulation. Mm-hmm. That's clear. That's clear. And that's a new mantra which comes from the extreme right. Look at what happens in Argentina. Look what Trump is doing. Look on the pressure of the oligarchs, the techno oligarchs. Well, deregulate. There should be no limit on what I can do on the platforms and so on. And that's why and climate. Just an example. Some people have said, oh, Rubio in Munich has been more friendly. No, he has not been more friendly. He has a different kind of speech or a way of saying the same things Trump or Vance are saying. When he attacks climate, he attacks Europe on climate, saying, well, you are crazy to follow this climate ideology. And then at the same time, we see that the climate crisis is really worsening from day to day even. So I think this is, and this ideology has influenced not just the extreme right, which uses it also in terms of fear, insecurity, well, you have to pay for something which is not true. These are the ideologues of the left, of the Greens, who are imposing that to you. Fake, but unfortunately, people are responding to that. And so we have to work on our climate policies, which are more necessary than ever. But we have to combine our climate policy with economic policy, and especially also with social policy. The fair transition, which has been asked by especially the our parties, but especially also the unions, has not been sufficiently followed up. I think we have to bring in this, because we have, by the way, good climate policies can be fair and should be fair. Mm-hmm. And by being fair, their impact, by the way, is much higher. It's much more positive. So I think this deregulation process or ideology is just to hide up that there should be a new shift. And you asked me about social. Well, there are already some issues which are more social issues. But, well, we will, when I listen to what some people from the business communities say, well, and followed by some conservative politicians, well, they will not stop to limit their actions when it comes to social. So we have to be very vigilant.
You mentioned the American political figures who represent this disruption, because the world is pretty much in the state of disruption today. But as a former diplomat, do you see a future for multilateralism in this world? How to save or stabilize?
Well, I think this Europe has to become mature in that sense. We have now a special new role, not alone. I just referred to the fantastic speech of Carney, the Canadian prime minister in Davos, who says, well, we have to rebuild something. It's not just, we cannot just be accept the destruction of some kind of multilateralism, of multilateralism and an international order. We have now to bring ideas on the table to rebuild something. And that's the coalitions of the willing also at the international level. I think with allies like Canada, like Australia, maybe also like some countries in Asia to rebuild something, to not to say, well, we want a ruleless world where the just strength and force, including military force, is dominating. No, I think we have now, as Europeans, a high responsibility in that. And I think our citizens should be in favor of that. But all things are coming together and are linked between the social model, fighting for multilateralism, fighting for a stronger Europe. Because if we have not a stronger Europe, we will not be able to keep our social model. That's another issue. So I think absolutely it has become also a geopolitical challenge for Europe. And we have to be up to that challenge.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the speech of Mark Carney. You mentioned before the election of Mamdani in New York. But these are North American examples. What brings the hope inside Europe?
Well, I have seen that in Europe, Sanchez, let's talk about one of the governments which is a left government, progressive government. Well, he brings in some ideas and is not really supported, as we have seen also recently during this informal summit. And I think the successes of the Spanish economy are there. He has more growth than those who practice neoliberal policies. Spain is developing, modernizing, investing in new technologies. Certainly there are the more classical services, very, very important, but also new energy, sustainable, renewable energy, very much pushing in Spain. So I think there are good examples also in Europe, how you can have a different approach and a progressive approach with successful outcome.
Well, this is an excellent closing, because we will have to set our eyes on Madrid and Barcelona in the coming period. Barcelona is going to be a venue for a great progressive gathering and mobilization in the coming period. And together we can bring the FEB's ideas and contributions to all these discussions in the spring period. Thank you so much, Nicola.
Thank you.
For this very interesting discussion. And we will follow up in discussion, but also in a lot of practice too.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Lars.